I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. It is such a delight to have Mike McArdle on again. I've been fortunate to have him on every year around this time as he's publishing another book. There's another one this year, another wonderful collection of essays about the unique people and situations he runs into in the course of filing his special human interest stories at the end of the highly rated news hour on Global. It's already a bestseller, and like the previous four books, it's raised tens of thousands of dollars for Variety, the children's charity. In the last book, Mike tells us about a young autistic boy he saw at Vancouver's Trout Lake. Young Riley sits, like Mike does, on the cover of this book with a stick, with a string on it, and at the end of the string is a safety pin. Meeting this remarkable boy, Mike changes his view of life and the world around him. Like he told us last year, he hasn't had a bad day since. The essays here are often funny, sometimes poignant, sometimes inspiring, always thoughtful. They give us a view onto ourselves, and they're just wonderful to read. The book is called The Expanded Riley Method, or Have a Great Day Forever. It's from Harbor Publishing. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Mike McArdle. Good day, Mr. McArdle.
Hello. Can you say all that again? I love hearing it. You're too good to me. Yeah, thanks. And this autistic kid, he's autistic, 9 years old, changed my life. And, wow, I've seen things that in other people's lives that have never met this this guy, and they've done the same thing. And all I can came out of that is my whole life became better. Like you were saying, I met this kid. I'll tell you this very briefly. I met this kid about five. It's actually it's more than that now. That was at the beginning of the book years ago, and he's fishing at Trout Lake, and he's got a stick, and it's got twigs sticking out of it, and a string at the end, and I mean that looks like it's right out of Hollywood, and like Tom Sawyer. And I ask if, because you can't talk to anybody unless their parents are around. I ask if his mother or father are nearby, and he says very hauntingly, she is over there. Oh, boy, this kid's got some problems, I see. And I go talk to his mother, who's reading a book nearby, and she says he's a foster kid, and she's a foster mother. And right away I know, you know, he's a, well, she told me he's 9 years old, but foster parents are wonderful. They're saving the world. But by the time a kid gets into a foster home at that age, you know he's had a tough life.
Yeah.
She has had. And so I go over, and with the cameraman leaning over my shoulder and me kneeling down, I ask, the kid's name is Riley, and I ask him, well, what you ask everybody who's fishing, you catch anything yet? And he keeps staring at the water. He says, no, but I believe, then he sniffs,
yeah.
Sniffs his nose, and that anything you want, and he sniffs again, and I'm watching this glob of green mucus sliding out of his right nostril, right down to his upper lip. And he goes on saying, I believe you can do anything, and he sniffs again, and I'm getting sick. I said, honestly,
yeah.
I'm ready to barf in the lake, and but I can't tell the kid, I can't tell him, hey, kid, blow your nose, because, well, I don't interfere with reality, you know, it's just, that's all I do is I report on what there is in whatever way I can. And he keeps sniffing, and he keeps saying he believes that he will catch a fish because anything he believes he can do, he will do. And then I said the same thing about a nibble. Did you get that? No. Sniff. No, he hasn't got a nibble yet, but he believes he will. Well, I got to end this pretty quickly because I'm not really feeling too well as this glob is coming down right to his tongue almost. And that was it. That was the end of the thing. And I asked the cameraman if he had seen the mucus. It was a funny exchange between the two of us of, you know, did you see that? Did you see, you know, he says, yeah, I saw this kid. No, I mean, did you see his nose? And the cameraman's saying to me, are you a nutcase? What do I care about his nose? No, the cameraman had not, because where he's standing, shot the mucus coming out. If he had the kid, it still would have been a fine story, but the sniffing would have upstaged what he was saying, and he would have been a regular sniffing 9-year-old kid.
Yeah.
But instead, what he's saying. He's like a philosopher. He's not like a, he is.
Yeah.
He's Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad, you know, whatever. And he's the power of positive thinking. And that story was nice, but then I start thinking about what I want to do every day. What I want to do is find a story that is kind of neat and uplifting. And I've been doing it much of my life. And but always I had been saying, I hope I find something. I got to work on finding something. Please, God, help me find something. Anything. But instead I said, I'll try his method. I just believe I will find something.
And
totally, absolutely, like he believes he's going to get a fish, I believe I'm going to get something.
And you do.
And in the 5 years, just like you said,
yeah,
in the 5 years following that, 1,000, that's 1,000, that's more than that actually, but 1,000 working days, I have not missed one day of finding a story.
Well, when they sent the book over, they sent this little piece of paper, Riley's Rules, you get what you believe you will get,
mm-hmm,
you are who you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Every religion says that. What you think is what you are. Or how you think is what you are. And basically everyone who I have met has created themselves. Even if, well, you know, I hate to say even if they don't know it, but they have. Happy people are happy, and
right,
they want to be happy. And then negative and sad, miserable people are that way because you say, you don't really want to be negative. And they say, no, I don't want to be negative. But what good is life? And what good is my wife, husband, kids, whatever, boss? You know, and nothing I do is ever right. And, well, you ever tried to, you know, just at least smile? There's nothing to smile about. So the more you talk to people who are either negative or positive, the more you find out that's exactly what they want to be.
It seems like nothing phases you. Does it frustrate you that a lot of us lose sight of that?
Well, it doesn't frustrate me. I just feel sad. I didn't have it for much of my life. I just felt good. But when I realized that if you get up in the morning and you say it's going to be a good day, just say it, and Lord, it turns out to be a good day.
Yeah.
How does that happen? You know, how does it happen that I don't get sick? I don't mean like you found a magic cure or anything. And I still have gotten some colds. And you know, in the book there's a story about the cold I got. I'm not going to admit I have a cold because I said I'm never going to be sick.
Uh-huh.
But you get over it really quickly. And I haven't taken any except one in the book Tylenol for 5 years. I just feel good. I say I'm not going to be sick. Somebody else told me that, and it's a very wise woman with white hair, and she said, I don't get sick because I just say I'm not going to be sick. And sure, she's gotten sick a few times, but not really bad. I mean, there's no time off from work. I've met there's a story in a brake mechanic working alone in a really rough, cold shop in South Vancouver, says the same thing. You know, 35 years, he's never been sick. Why should he be sick? He just says, I'm not going to be sick.
Yeah.
I say, I'm not going to have an argument with my wife. And for 5-6 years now, I haven't. Of course, she's had a few with me.
Yeah.
But I haven't had any with her. And do things turn out well? Yeah. Why? I just, you can think, I'm afraid of this upcoming situation, or you can just say, it's going to be fine. Because you don't change reality at all. You can't. I mean, we're not gods or anything. But you change your perception of reality. You change the way you see it.
Right.
And I guess that's the secret that, you know, people found 10,000 years ago when they said, you get what you believe you'll get. And, I mean, it's been 100 self-help books written on this. The Bible is about it. The Koran is about it. The Talmud is about it. That's, you know, all religions. You can move a mountain if you believe you'll move the mountain. It doesn't say you're going to bend, like, you know, bend the spoon.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're not going to bend the spoon by staring at it. You're not going to move the mountain by moving it, by staring at it. But, you know, like I said in the book, you know, you get an excavator and the government permits, well, you can move the mountain.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's the point? It's not magic that people say that mountain can't be moved. Whatever the mountain is, you know, alcoholism, drugs, misery, poverty, ignorance, those are all mountains. Can you move them?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. How do you do it? You just say, I'm going to do it. And what happens after that? You do it.
Yeah. For me, growing up, your pieces at the end of the news hour were always a memorable thing. At the next day and things like that. When what sort of reaction do you get from people that you see on the street?
Well, I'm lucky because they invariably, almost always, say it was a nice story last night. Well, heck, that makes me feel good, you know. And they say it made me feel better. That makes me feel better too.
Yeah.
And I do them honestly to make myself feel good. It's selfish, you know, totally selfish. I look for somebody who's usually smiling or happy so that I feel good. Then you tell that story again, and others feel good. Well, heck, you know, that's as good as having a really juicy hamburger, unless you're a vegetarian, than a good juicy veggie burger.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes you feel good. It's the chocolate ice cream of life, except it becomes life without making you fat.
Yeah. We had Tony Parsons on for his book, and I understand you're both from the same publisher. Has there been a bit of a competition between the two of you over who sells more?
Unspoken. Yeah, that's it. His is entirely different.
Yeah.
This is about himself in the business. Mine is about others. I mean, his is fine. It's just different, an entirely different kind of books. So there's a competition. Well, yeah, I hope I stay ahead of him.
And I think you have, haven't you?
Yeah, so far, yeah.
Yeah. How has this transition been between him and the new host from the other side of the television set?
Fine. You know, it's easing. Tony is easing himself out. And Chris Galis has been easing in. You can't live forever. You can't stay forever. And the same as me, I'll be easing out eventually. I retired last year, but then I came back.
Yeah. You mentioned that in the book. You took a bit of a leave, did you?
Yeah. Well, I had to. They said they have a rule, or had to have a rule at the TV place, that you have to retire at 65, and I had to go away for a month, and I really, really missed going out and looking for something neat. It's not always happy, you know. Sometimes it's sad things,
mm-hmm.
But they are just as meaningful, and they're people overcoming stuff. And anyhow, after the month, I came back and I got a contract, and I am now a freelancer. After 35 years with the company as an employee, I'm still with the company, but as a outside supplier of stories.
Yeah. So you still appear Sundays to Thursday?
Sunday to Thursday, right.
Yeah.
On the television, it doesn't look any different at all.
No, yeah. You talked about moving mountains a sec ago. There are a lot of pieces in the book, and a lot of the pieces that you do on television, we find you in the downtown East Side.
More mountains down there.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time there. What's the goal? To show a different side of the neighborhood, or just that there are wonderful stories there sometimes?
Well, yeah, both. Because it's a miserable place, if you look at it that way. It's a place where you can overcome problems, if you look at it that way. And the stories in the book are about people who have overcome misery. And you can do it. These folks, these women and men that I've written about, that I've met, that I've talked to and watched, they are the heroes, and they are the inspiration for others. It's the drug addiction down there will ruin anybody. I mean, you can't smoke crack and have a normal life. You wind up crawling on your knees in front of a, and this is what they do. I mean, the addicts are so hungry for another little piece of crystallized cocaine that they're on the hands and knees in front of the dealers, crawling on the sidewalk, looking for something the size of a grain of salt, and scratching it out of the cracks in the ground. What a pathetic, sad, heartbreaking place to put yourself in. And yet, there's a, some people in the book that have come from there, and now are trying to help others to get up off their hands and knees. They have jobs, they have families, they have one of them has started his own rescue service. You know, counseling is a weak word. Just plain old helping others down there, and those are people who I look up to and say, my God, you've had a lot tougher life than I have, or mostly anyone has, and look at where you are now. Look, the good ones. Look, you know, I remember a woman saying, "I'm," you know, she's been off her her drugs, or mostly crack and regular cocaine for about 6 months, which is a pretty good time. And I said, "How are you?" And she just smiled. She said, "I'm free. I'm free."
Yeah.
Oh, wow, wow. You know, and you tell that story, and somebody else down there who knows what misery is, but knows what a stranglehold that the drugs have on them, they see that and they think, maybe, just maybe I can. You know, and I know many of the people down there. It's a place that of, well, triumph and disaster.
Yeah. You grew up in New York. You covered New York. You have a piece in the book about Curtis Sliwa.
Yeah.
Do you know him?
I don't know him well, but I met him when I was in New York.
Yeah.
Briefly, because he was just starting out in his Guardian Angels stuff about the same time that I left.
And when you consider New York City and what that went through, and our downtown east side, where do you see us heading?
Well, in the last book, and I wrote about Welcome to Fabulous Maine and Hastings, because I can see the change coming down there, and it's not just from Olympics. It's from people getting tired of it, being miserable, and trying, just picking up litter, but then some people moving in there because the rent is cheap. But they, it was anyway. It's going up, or condos are cheaper, and they go to work. They pay taxes, and they call the mayor, and they say, "Mr. Mayor, I pay my taxes. I'm really tired of drug dealers standing in front of my door." And eventually, enough of them call, and eventually, the mayor says to the police chief, "You gotta do something." So they move them down. You just move them a little bit. Okay, well, that's a little bit of moving. And then somebody else moves in there, and the same thing happens again. There's a young guy I work with who is the webmaster. There's a job that didn't exist when I started. And he's very young. He just moved down to Powell and Maine. Or Cordova, what the heck? I forgot which street it is. It's right at the very, basically in the heart of Skid Row. Mm-hmm. He is so happy to be there because he says he can see it changing. And this is a very clean-cut young guy. In 10 years, it's not going to happen overnight, but in 10 years it'll seem like it happened overnight. It'll go back to being, it'll be, the trendiest part of town with coffee shops. Two new coffee shops, Waves Coffee Shops, opened up on one on Cordova and Maine, and the other one on Pender and Maine. And they're not going to move into an open, expensive stores, put in hardwood on the floor and serve cappuccinos, unless they fully believe the neighborhood is on its way up. And it is. They've got customers, and the more people that go back to areas like that, like in the, say, the 40s and the 50s, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, that was the center of town. That's where all the soldiers marched down. That's where you got, you changed your trolley cars, your streetcars, and bought muffins or a tie, because there were stores all along there, and there were no drug dealers, because, well, heck, the streets were filled with commuters and shoppers, and Woodward's was alive, and the only seafood place was open. It's not now.
Yeah.
And lots of the restaurants down there, and the bars were fine, you know, because it was just a neat place to go get a beer. And but that's all when the drug dealers moved in and the streetcars moved out, and then more drug dealers, and then the hat shop moved out and more drug dealers moved in, and with the drug dealers, of course, came the drug addicts, and they don't have jobs, and the only way to get money for their drugs is to steal it, and then somebody else is going to try to steal it from them, and then you wind up with a real rotten situation.
I'm trying to remember, I think you talked about this in the book, and I'm trying to remember now where. You hadn't seen Riley since that
nope.
initial story?
No, I saw him once.
Yeah.
And I go to Trout Lake very often. I go everywhere very often. That's what I do. I just wander around. And I never saw him again.
But you kept in touch with the foster mom, did you?
I did for a short time, because a whole bunch of people after the first story wanted to give him fancy fishing stuff. And that was really nice of them. So I called the mother, and she talked to Riley and came back and said, no, thank you. He wants to catch a fish with his fishing rod. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Broke my heart, and yet I said, yeah, attaboy.
Yeah.
When you do that, you'll have done what you said you'll do. And I know, you know, he'll catch a fish. Maybe not in Trout Lake. Maybe, maybe not in front of anybody else's eyes.
Yeah. Do you wonder where he is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he could have just gone off to a different foster home. The foster mother could have moved. He could have, you know, 9 and 5, 6 years, 15. He may have different interests.
Yeah. This photograph of you on the book, where's that taken?
That's Trout Lake.
Oh, that is?
Yep.
Yeah. Will there be another book next year?
I hope so.
I mean, it'd just be great to talk to you again next year. You know?
I'll talk to you anyway.
Yeah. The other thing that I was thinking after reading the book, and I watched some of the clip, they've got it on the Global website, some of your pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do a DVD, Mike.
That's up to the TV places, not the... TV stations, not up to me.
No,
yeah. They own the stories.
Yeah,
They own the rights to them and all that.
I mean, some of them. I was watching some of the Remembrance Day ones, and you go to the Billy Bishop, and man, that's just, you know, your eyes don't stay dry, you know.
No.
Yeah,
no.
But it's such a delight to talk to you again, Mike. And you know, if you've got a book next year, you're welcome. If not, I'll hope to have you on again.
Okay, Joseph.
Happy Christmas,
Thank
Mike.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you.
Okay. Thanks Bye. Very much. The book is called The Expanded Riley Method, or Have a Great Day Forever. It's published by Harbor. Global's Mike McArdle on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plana.